I want revenge, my off, we're gonna tether him off the mother sucker. Tether him off the sucker. Tether him off, we're gonna tether him off the mother sucker. Tether him off the sucker. Tether him off, we're gonna tether him off the mother sucker. Tether him off the sucker.
You gotta build up a thing going down.
Oh, we yeah. You are listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. My name is Norman Otis Richmond, a.k.a. Jalali, speaking to you from the not-so-great White North here in Toronto, Canada. And June is Black Music Month, and we just heard from Parliament Funkadelic, and we also heard from James Brown. And Parliament, the group Parliament was actually... the name Parliament is actually registered as a... No, Funkadelic, pardon me. Funkadelic is registered in Toronto, Canada, because Funkadelic lived in... many members of Funkadelic lived in Toronto for many years, and Bernie Worrell lived in Scarborough, and George Clinton actually lived in Mississauga. And we also played, and didn't mention her, but Angelique... Kidjo, we did a song, we played her, we opened up the show with Agolo, and joining me on the line from Hamilton, Ontario is Colina Phillips, who is a director and a singer. And Colina Phillips has a made a great film called Making Change, her first film, which debuted at the Toronto International Film Festival. And she helped create the an organization founded by Claire Preto, the Black Film and Video Network. And she has, she worked with people like Cameron Bailey, who is now the head of the Toronto International Film Festival, Clement Virgo, and many other people, Karen King. And she is also a singer, and she has... been on Gold Records, and she had a group called the Tierras, a four-voice group that toured around Southern Ontario, and they opened up for the Monkees at Maple Leaf Gardens. And she grew up listening to Count Basie, Duke Ellington, Cab Calloway, Ella Fitzgerald, Sarah Vaughan, Carmen McRae, and I guess she likes Dave Brubeck, listening to jazz. And she was a... she did a lot of work with the CBC program Celebration, and she's worked with people, Anne Murray, Celine Dion, Chaka Khan, and did backing vocals for Bryan Adams, Bruce Colburn, Jackie Richardson, who is a great vocalist, and Murray McLaughlin, Alice Cooper, Michael Bolton, and many, many others. And I would like to welcome... Colleen Phillips to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, and thank you very much, Norman, for that terrific introduction. It's very nice to be with you this afternoon.
I basically wanted to talk to you about your directing. I wanted you to talk about your Colleen Phillips to the director, but we're going to leave that for last. All right. I wanted to. This is Black Music Month, and. I think Black Music Month has been obscured. The current mayor of Toronto, Rob Ford, has not. He hasn't since he's been in power. He's never issued a proclamation. David Miller did. All the mayors, even Mel Lastman and the other mayors did. But what are your thoughts on Black Music Month?
Well, I mean, I think that it is so. A deserved recognition of the kind of presence that Black musicians, singers have had on Toronto and Canada's music scene. There's a very strong presence of music here in Toronto going back quite a long way. And so I think that that recognition is deserved. And it continues, of course. It's not just what happened way back when. That is, I think, an unbroken thread of talent and innovation that has occurred and deserves to be recognized for sure.
Now, let's go back to the church. I think it was the British Methodist Episcopal Church, the BME. I met a woman by the name of, I referred to her as Miss Trotman. Grace Trotman, and I guess that's because of my Southern background, but I remember meeting Miss Trotman many times. I went by her house and interviewed her for a story that I did called the history of black music in Toronto beginning in 1920. And I understand that she came from Liberia and she was the musical director at the BME Church in Toronto. And you, I guess all of the Tierras, and came out, were under her tutelage. So I basically wanted you to talk about the Tierras first and then talk about Miss Trotman.
Okay, well, I can talk about the Tierras. We were a group of children, really, who went to the BME Church. We probably became really aware of each other and solidified our friendships that have lasted, you know, all this time, when we were probably before we were even 10 years old, going to the Friday night choir practices. And eventually, as we got older, and I think we saw the group that Jay Jackson, Eric Mercury were involved in, the boys, they had a group, and we thought, why don't we set up our own group? And so we did, and we took, it was every girl, I think, from the junior choir on Friday night. After our Friday night choir practices, we'd go down into the gym, and we'd stand around, and we'd, you know, figure out some song that we were going to sing ourselves. So it was Arlene Trotman, who was, I have a hard time calling Mrs. Trotman. I just can't call her Mrs. Trotman. I have to call her Aunt Grace because that's what we always called her. But Arlene Trotman was Aunt Grace's daughter, and Sean Jackson was part of, in the group. Daisy and Beverly Waterman, Sandra Foster, Carolyn Cook, who was Sean's cousin, and myself, we go down in the gym and we would sing the tunes of the day. And we were called the Sneakers at that time. That was because the thing that we could figure out to wear for our first performance at the Home Service Club that was up on Bathurst Street. We were performing there, and we all wore our prom dresses and running shoes, and our name was the Sneakers.
More like you wore gowns and tennis shoes.
That's right. Yeah, okay. It was pretty fun. We wanted to be different, you know.
Right.
So we continued, you know, some of us were more oriented to singing than others, and so we continued, Arlene and Sean and myself, and we became the Tierras and started singing around Southern Ontario. We did a lot of gigs, you know, traveling back and forth on the weekends. We also were part of the contingent of people who regularly appeared on the television shows that were set up for after school, like Music Hop. There was a Go-Go 66, which I think was out at CTV. And we would perform as well at the Blue Note. And everybody used to stop in at the Blue Note if they came to town. A lot of, like the Supremes would turn up there after their official gig. The Blue Note was an after-hours club, so the Supremes would come by, or Stevie Wonder, just everybody that came to town, and we performed there as well. It was the church. I have to credit the church and the music and the friends and singers that I met in the BME Junior Choir for really setting me on the path of a musical career. We, Mrs. Trotman just really kept, I did it. She really kept us.
I'm very influential. I got you calling her Miss Trotman, okay.
Yes.
I know I'm good, but I didn't know I was that good.
Well, I mean, it just, we're just thinking, you know, respectfully of all that she did for us, and really she has a very long legacy in Toronto music.
She came out of Liberia, right?
That's right.
Right.
She had come from Liberia, and as well her husband, Colin Trotman. I think that they met here,
right.
and married, and had two children, Barry and Arlene. But she was the crown jewel of the church, and he was, I think, the crown jewel of the choir, although I think my my own father, Lloyd Phillips, gave him a little bit of a run for his money, but but really, he was an excellent singer, and she worked that choir. I mean, we had a senior choir and we had a junior choir, and the senior choir would really do some spectacular performances of things like the Hallelujah Chorus, which is, you know, by no means an easy piece to accomplish for a group that was basically rehearsing once a week in addition to anything that they would be doing for the weekly services.
What were some of the songs in your repertoire?
Well, in the junior choir, I remember, you know, things like No Hiding Place Down Here. That was one of our favorites, actually, because the sort of punchline was, there's no hiding place down here. If you're not going to go to heaven, you're going to go to, and we never said hell, but we'd all stamp our feet and clap. And that was, I think that was one of our, one of our favorite tunes. But she had a really, you know, she had us doing a really good repertoire of songs, and she chose things that really did appeal, like that example really did appeal to children. Quite often I'm hearing choirs, and the children are singing really great songs, but they're not so much geared to children. They're geared to, they're just wonderful songs to sing. But I think that you get a certain extra measure of joy if you can actually bring songs to the children that the children are going to like and take a hold of themselves. Another one that I think was one of my favorites was Jacob's Ladder, because
right.
We kind of would do that in a round sort of a way, and the beautiful harmonies that we would sing with, and, you know, our higher voices and the lower voices all combining. I think that might have given Sean and I in particular a really strong grounding in singing harmony, which came to we put to good use later on in our careers again.
Could I stop you there, because I just wanted to say that you're listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. My name is Irrelevant, but I am speaking with Colina Phillips, and you mentioned a couple of names before you continue. Eric Mercury went on to, he was a movie star. He played the commissioner of basketball in The Fish to Save Pittsburgh. I'll leave it at that. And he has a lot of melanin, so that, I always found that to be funny. He also was Electric Black Man. He signed with Stax Records, and he wrote with Stevie Wonder and was with Roberta Flack for a second. Also, you mentioned Jay Jackson, and Jay Jackson had a TV show, and he's still in the land of the living. And his sister, Shawn Jackson, she had, I think she had a deal with RCA Records, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right. She had Just As Bad, a big hit on, we'd hear that on the, we'd just jump around for joy when we would hear Shawn Jackson singing Just As Bad As You come on the radio. It was, you know, so
but
special.
I'm sorry, I had cut you off. I just wanted to give a station ID, but
okay.
I hope you remember where you were, because I don't remember.
Well, I was just, you know, talking about the fact that because we came through the choir and sang so much before we really got into our teen years, I think, and just at that time, I guess with timing being everything, music hop and a go-go 66 and those kinds of programs coming onto television, after school programs, and we had been singing, and we just continued to sing and got involved and performed on those shows as well. So just talking about the legacy of Grace Trautman and Grace the things that she put in motion by her putting such great input and effort into teaching us how to sing.
Right.
And so continuing on as far as the tiaras go, we continued and absorbed, I shouldn't say absorbed, but a lot of people who were still singing or who are great fantastic singers in Toronto and in the United States, in fact, were members of the Tierras. We spoke about Jackie Richardson already, who's an actor and singer, and I have to say this, because when she hears it, she's going to crack up, but she was also the choreographer of the Tierras. She did. I think I still remember the steps to reach out that we used to do.
She was a Charlie Atkins. She did all the steps.
Yeah, she did it. She did everything.
Right.
Multi-talented person. Betty Richardson was in the Tierras. Betty and Jackie were in at the same time. And Betty, we hear frequently. She's frequently performing around Toronto. Brenda Russell, whom I'm sure everybody knows, who has a wonderful singing career, but who also was one of the writers of the music for The Color Purple, which, you know, was nominated for a Tony in New York.
She also did a duet with Gerald Austin of the Manhattans in, I think, in the film Do the Right Thing. We had Gerald Austin on here a couple of weeks ago, and also we... I think Brenda Russell she's a Facebook friend of mine, for whatever that's worth, yeah.
That's very cool. Worth a lot, I would think. But,
yeah.
I mean, I think because of the Tierras, there was somewhere for her to go. That being a member of the Tierras was the first sort of semi-professional singing that Brenda had done.
Mm-hmm.
And that began with the Tierras, who began really in the BME Church. If you follow the line back, and with Andy Grace.
Did the Tierras ever record?
We did. Yes, we did. Actually, we were recorded by Al Snyder. We had a manager, Al Rain, who wrote a lot of great songs for us. Songs of the Day, and they took us down to New York twice, and we recorded with the great Phil Ramone, as a matter of fact.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we have
would that be on YouTube, the song? Because everything seems...
You know, it isn't, and it's just something that I've been looking into, because I see how much people are going back and looking for things like that. So I don't believe that is on YouTube, but I've actually been intending to get together with Jackie and Sean and Brenda and everybody when we can. Probably it'll have to be a phone meeting and talk about what we can do to put some of that history out there, because I think it should be. I think you're right in mentioning that. It's not there now, but we hope that it will be in future.
Now, let me ask you a question. The AME Church and the BME Church, what was the difference between the musical directions of, I know the African Methodist Episcopal Church was created in Philadelphia, 18-something, and the BME Church, or the AME, let's say the AME Church went to, they had one in Oakville and in Toronto, South Africa. Bishop Henry McNeil Turner, who was a great black nationalist who said God was black, and he was a very light-skinned brother, for whatever that's worth, but his argument was that God was black, and he died, I think he died in Windsor, but the AME Church came out of Philadelphia. Then the BME Church is split from them, or what was the difference, and what was the difference between them, not differences in terms of fighting differences, but the two separate churches, and what kind of church does the AME Church have? What kind of choir did they have, if they had one at all?
Yes, they did have a choir, and the last choir mistress was Peggy Downs.
Ah, Peggy Downs, okay,
yeah,
yes, okay.
Yeah, and I must say that I'm not really familiar with their history, as much, although I know that our family did go to the AME for a certain period of time,
right.
And then we switched to the BME. At that
right.
point, it was not you know, part of my choosing. It would have been my parents choosing that, and I'm not really sure why, except that I know, or it seems to me, that the BME had a congregation that had a lot of people who were of West Indian descent. And it seems that the AME was more Canadian descent.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
The AME church used to always have Thanksgiving, $5 or $10, you could get a dinner on American Thanksgiving, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was a tradition in Toronto. You could,
at the AME.
AME church, which used to be, that's where I got married, in the AME church. The AME church on Soho Street, right?
Yes, that's right.
Right. It's not there any longer on Soho, but
no.
Right.
Well, that same tradition, or that tradition, is carried on here in Hamilton at Stuart Memorial, and they celebrated now. I get they must be up to their 177th anniversary.
Right.
Now, their church has been established for a long time, and they always have an American Thanksgiving celebration. And part of that celebration, if I can just big up Hamilton a little bit, is a concert. They combine the dinner with a concert, because it's a small church, and so not everyone can get in to sit down all at the same time. So they have a concert to entertain the people who are waiting for dinner. And Harrison comes up and does that. And
Harrison Kennedy.
That's right. And also, I just wanted to mention it particularly because that is a congregation of really talented singers. It is quite impressive to be able to keep a concert going on basically the people in your congregation for a couple of hours of an evening as people are coming and going and having dinner. So they're part of they've done their contributing to the Canadian music scene as well.
Let me ask you this, and then we want to move on to you or your Colleen Phillips as a director.
Mm-hmm.
But Harrison Kennedy was a member of the chairman of the board, and I've always said, and I don't know how true it is, that he was the first Canadian person to sell a million records with the chairman of the board. Now, I know Oscar Peterson probably has sold, over periods of time, he's had to have songs that have sold a million copies, but it's faster for the R&B stuff to sell. But besides Harrison Kennedy, could you talk about some of the people that some of the musicians that Hamilton, Ontario has produced?
Well, particularly Jackie Washington. I think that he is one of probably the backbone or the foundation of music in Hamilton. I have been living in Hamilton. I should say back in Hamilton, because when my family first moved up here from Nova Scotia, we lived in Hamilton for a year, and it was what I always wanted to come back to Hamilton to live, and now I'm here. But Brian Gibson, who is Brian Griffiths, is a guitar player who is actually descending from Jackie Washington. I think he is his grandson, in fact. The Waynes were another family of musicians who brought a lot to Hamilton. I wish that I had a list of all of the people, just that I know through my experiences of being at the church and hearing the voices. There's a lot of music history in Hamilton, and it continues. There are people coming up who will be hearing from. In fact, I'm hoping to start a vocal group. I'm going to give myself some time and say a year that will involve some of those people.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let us. I'm speaking with Colleen Phillips of Hamilton, Ontario. And once again, I'd like to let everyone know that June is Black Music Month, and we're going to be interviewing a lot of people from Toronto, a lot of people from Canada doing Black Music Month. Hopefully we'll get Jay Jackson on, Jay and Sean Jackson on at the same time.
That'll be a wonderful interview.
We want to interview Eric Mercury, possibly talk to Jay Douglas. So we've had Jay Douglas on, I think, Diasporic Music before. And, of course, we would have to talk to the godfather of every of music at this point, Archie Aileen. We would have to. Mm. He's just come back from Ethiopia and Uganda. So we wanted to move on to talk about Miss Phillips as a director. How did you make the jump from singing to the film situation? How did that work out?
Well, this is a bit of a jump. I became interested in writing, actually. And I took a writing course that there was writing for theater, writing commercially, like for magazines, and writing for film. And when I got to the film writing, I was totally hooked. It involves everything that I love. And being a mildly, I would say, a control freak, it gives you an opportunity to control everything, all aspects of performing. There's music involved, there's dialogue, there's costuming, there's, you know, telling people what to do. Well, who doesn't love that, you know? and I guess primarily I love writing. And so I got involved and then found out about an organization called the Black Film and Video Network that was started up by Claire Prato and Karen King, I think, was an original member. I believe Veronica Siandre, who worked doing hair for film, several other people. I think Roger McTerra was Claire's husband. Were all involved,
right.
in beginning the network. And that the purpose of the network was to develop more Black film, specifically producers, but people who were involved in film work. And I got involved with them and, you know, was going around calling myself a filmmaker because I was now a member of the organization, when Claire very quietly pointed out to several of us who had been making that error that we had to make a film first before we were filmmakers. So I had to set about making a film.
It kind of makes a little bit of sense, doesn't it?
Yes, it certainly does. It catches you up short. You are not a filmmaker. You have not made a film yet. Oh, okay. So I got right onto that, and I was lucky. I wrote a script that got some funding, and you know, made my hair stand on end, because now that you have some funding, that means you really do have to make it. And I really was not experienced, apart from having taken several of the workshops that the network would put on from time to time. They had St. Clair Bourne and Haile Jerima come up from the States and do workshops with us and help us to develop our projects and to really think about the stories that we wanted to tell. And so I told a story about my dad, who was a coal miner in Nova Scotia, and he wanted to be a musician. And so the film was called Making Change, and it was about a transition, making the transition from being a coal miner to being a musician. And it facilitated my transition from being a musician, a singer, into being a filmmaker. So it was kind of a very special event to do. And then further, to my somewhat astonishment, it was accepted for the Toronto International Film Festival. So that
was film available through, can you... I'm sorry for cutting you, but is that available through the National Film Board? Can people go see it? Is it on video or?
It would be available through me. It is also, it would be part of Cinematheque which is part of Toronto International Film Festival.
Oh,
okay. The Cinematheque Library.
Right. Okay.
As they would have all of the films that were
in the festival there. You sell it yourself?
Yes. If someone were interested, they could.
How can they get hold of you?
Just Kalina Phillips.
Google searching and find.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We have about 3 minutes left. Is there anything else you would like to add?
Well, I would like to add that I just completed a second short film called Leap Your Love Dance, and it is the story about John Ware, who was a black cowboy out in Alberta, very prominent man. It's about the day that he meets his wife, and it's told in music and dance. And it covers a span of 1892 to 2012. And
well,
it's it's a chronology of dances from that time set to the period music and in costume. So I'm hoping to have that out there, and hoping that it will make the film festival as well. I'll be hearing about that in a couple of months.
I was looking through some old newspapers yesterday, and I actually found John Ware's name written down. I think I was doing some research on Black History Month, and he was one of the people that I wanted to highlight. I think he came out of Oklahoma or someplace before he came to, I don't know if that's true, but if he came someplace and he settled there, but I don't remember, but that's irrelevant. The question, your father's background, was he one of the, did he come through, not your father, but your parents, did they come through the Underground Railroad or did they come from the Caribbean to Nova Scotia?
They came from the Caribbean at the time that the coal industry was looking for people who could really, I guess, work those mines. And there was a small contingent of West Indian families that settled in Glace Bay and in around.
Were they from Barbados?
Area. Yes, they were.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I did a little research on Nova Scotia. You had the Underground Railroad, blacks, the Bajans.
Yeah.
And I think the Maroons some Maroons that they could not control came to Nova Scotia. Yeah.
Yes, they were mainlanders, and we were Cape Bretoners.
I will definitely have to sit down and maybe we can. I need to do a show on that whole Nova Scotia thing because we've been making some links with Nova Scotia. We talked to Rocky Jones recently, and we talked to L. Jones, and we're doing some work around trying to bring African people in Canada together because we don't have. We're just so scattered. Nova Scotia, Toronto, Ottawa, Montreal, and
Calgary,
Vancouver. Yeah. It's not like the United States. You can go from city to city to city. Like we're really isolated up here as a people.
That's true. And I really want. I mean, I'm glad that you found John Ware's name. Coincidentally, they issued a stamp last year, at the same time that I was making a film, which was quite thrilling. His picture on the stamp, but it's really important to get more of those stories out there. And not only this, I mean, he was a foundational member of the cattle industry in Calgary,
right.
And you know, it's so his importance at the time that they were trying to establish cattle ranching in Alberta is very significant, and it's not known. And so I am hoping to bring his story and more stories of that nature into public.
All right, Ms. Phillips, I appreciate your time. I think we've gone over time, but I really don't mind because it's not commercial radio, so we're in control of this situation. So
all right.
Going over time is no big thing.
Okay, well, it was a great pleasure to talk to you today and be able to talk about some of the beginnings of music and some Canadian black history. Wonderful. Thank you so much for inviting me on the show.
And this will be in the archives, so anyone can listen to it, you know, by the end of the day, you can just go to www.uhururadio.com, and you can let all your friends and family and everybody check it out.
Okay, that's great. I will set up a link as well.
That would help. That would be helpful. I really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Norman.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
We have been speaking with Colina Phillips. My name is Jalali, speaking to you from the great, not so great white north here in Toronto, Canada. And now we're going to pay a tribute to Marvin Jr. of the Dells.
Mm-hmm.